You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 317 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you on this fun Wednesday evening. A lot to get to on today's podcast, including some mailbag questions for the first time in a while, so I appreciate everybody that weighed in with some prompts for me in that regard, and we'll plow through those as well. I do want to start the podcast, though, by checking in with a few numbers, a couple of projection systems, that kind of stuff, sort of a roundup of where we are right now when it comes to the Atlanta Hawks. A couple of numbers in terms of lineups that I wanted to hit on real quick that I have been sort of perusing here. Nothing incredibly in-depth, but some interesting sort of eyebrow raises in the last couple of days that I've read. The first one being the fact that the pairing of Dennis Schroeder and Marco Bellinelli is not very good. That's something that I've been tweeting about a little bit, and it comes down to the defensive end of the court. Of course, it's not a secret at all that Schroeder has been a defensive problem for the Hawks this year. I will say he's been better recently. I mentioned that on a few podcasts recently. Dennis's effort has been up. With that said, he's still one of the bottom 10 guys in terms of ESPN's defensive RPM, which was updated this week, and Bellinelli is also in the bottom 12 or 13. So both those guys are punished heavily defensively, and that shows up in their on-off metrics as well. In fact, when the Hawks play those two guys together, Schroeder and Bellinelli, they are being outscored by a 15.1 points per 100 possessions clip, which is worse than the worst team in the league by a wide margin. It's basically an absolutely historically bad clip for a full season by any team. And with that said, it's basically all on the defensive end, where they are allowing a 118.7 defensive rating. That is far better than the Warriors, just for a little bit of context there. It's better than the Golden State Warriors are on a regular basis, and sort of far better. It's one of those things where, that pairing is not good. Let's just say that. It's only 403 minutes, but that's a real sample size. These guys are playing a lot of minutes together. You know, offensively, there are some things that you would like about that pairing. Of course, Bellinelli's offense is very valuable at times, but, you know, defensively, his individual on-off numbers are just pretty brutal this year, just because of the fact that they are so bad defensively every time that Bellinelli enters the floor. And with Schroeder, his defense is sort of magnified when you have a guy like Bellinelli on the court, because Bellinelli is a guy you need to paper over, and Schroeder is a guy you probably need to hide a little bit right now with the way that he's been playing. So that pairing was an eyebrow raise for me. It's been really, really bad. On the flip side, though, the backcourt pairing of Malcolm Delaney and Isaiah Taylor has been quite good this year. They're actually outscoring opponents by 10.1 points per 100 possessions. That's by far the best backcourt for the Hawks roster. If you pair Taylor with Schroeder, or Delaney with Schroeder, the numbers sort of fall off a cliff a little bit there, and they become negative in a hurry. But that backup tandem of Taylor and Delaney has been very, very good. That's one of the biggest reasons why the Hawks have been able to play so well since Delaney re-entered the rotation as a sort of pure shooting guard backup. Ever since that point in time, the Hawks are playing better as a team. It's not all about that pairing, but they've been very, very good on the court together, something to monitor moving forward. And especially with, you know, Bembry continues to be in the G League, and that's not a huge surprise given the way that he played. But for now, it looks like that Delaney-Taylor combination is going to be sticking around for a while, and it's worked very, very well. Last thing in terms of individual stuff here, the current starting lineup that includes Miles Plumlee at center is actually outscoring opponents by 2.5 points per 100 possessions. That's not crazy by any means, but that's probably, you know, a 46 win clip, something like that, over a full season. And that's, of course, it's only one lineup, and it's only 175 minutes, so less than 200 minutes of time together with that starting five together right now. But if you're looking for reasons why Bud might be riding with Plumlee a little bit more than we all want him to, that could be one of the reasons, is the Hawks are playing well at the beginning of games, beginning of the half each time. And I don't subscribe to that necessarily as a sustainable thing, given the presence of Plumlee, but they are playing well in that lineup, so just take that for what it's worth right now. Before we get into the mailbag, though, I do want to hit on a couple of other things, and that's basically the projection systems. A little bit of a roundup here. With the Hawks playing much better basketball recently, you know, obviously the loss on Tuesday was a heartbreaker and in a lot of ways and really frustrating against the Suns, but the Hawks are just playing better basketball in the last month or so. With that said, they're now sort of rising a little bit in terms of their projection, 538, which is one that I usually cite the most. I think it's probably the best representation of what I want to use in this category. Still has the Hawks as the team with the worst record in the league projected wise, but up to 24-58. Even a couple of weeks ago, the Hawks were in the teens. So they're just playing better basketball. 24 wins would probably not be good enough to quote unquote to get the worst record in the league, but it is still projected to be that as of now for 538. Number fire is very, very high on the Hawks at 30 and 52 projection. I will say though, everything in the number fire model is pulled to the middle. For reference, the highest projection right now of the Warriors is only 57, 58 wins, and that's pretty conservative as to what most people think that the Warriors are going to be able to do this year, as well as the Rockets if they are fully healthy, et cetera, et cetera. So it's one of those systems that pulls everybody towards the middle, and the Hawks are actually still only 29th in the league, despite with 30 and the 31 projection. So there's that. Team rankings, another good site, 26 and 56 for the Hawks. So, you know, somewhere in the middle there, only ahead of the Sacramento Kings. ESPN's Basketball Power Index does not have a record projection, but has the Hawks at number 27 overall. That's to say, it's a pure statistical metric that, you know, has some credence. And finally, Basketball Reference does not have a projected win-loss, but they have an expected win-loss at this point at 14 and 23. So the Hawks are underperforming that considerably. And they actually at number 25 overall in the NBA. So all that to say, nobody thinks that the Hawks are suddenly a good basketball team, but they are not the dregs that they were a couple of weeks ago in terms of these metrics. In terms of just pure net rating, the Hawks are certainly nowhere near the bottom of the list in the NBA right now. Coming into Wednesday night's games, the Hawks were number 25 in net rating at minus 3.6 points per 100 possessions. Defensively, they were sitting at number 27 overall by NBA.com's metrics, and offensively, they're actually improving to the point where they are at number 15 overall, something that I definitely never would have projected this year, the Hawks having a league average offense or something close to that. Defensively, it's been sort of a mess, but offensively, a pleasant surprise. If you look at the the numbers adjusted to take out garbage time over at Cleaning the Glass, which are probably more representative, the Hawks are treated a little bit worse there. They're number 29 in the league defensively, and only number 19 in the league offensively. That's probably about right. You know, they've been very good. If you look at some of the individual numbers, the guys who do not play much or haven't played much this year, basically only garbage time, have really good net ratings. That's usually a good indication that the Hawks are taking advantage, quote unquote, of the situations where nobody's really trying, and these adjusted numbers probably tell a little bit better story there. The Hawks and Hawks are number 26 overall in terms of Cleaning the Glass metric in net rating, and that sounds probably a little bit more right as in terms of what this team actually is right now. But still, they're playing a little bit better than that right now, and that's something that should certainly be monitored moving forward. Before we get to the mailbag, let's talk about the good folks at MyBookie. The NFL playoffs are here, and it's time to get on the action with MyBookie. Are you sick and tired of getting to run around when you ask for a payout? Sign up today at MyBookie.ag and get paid fast when you win. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs, and you can even deposit using Bitcoin. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. If you want to make money betting NFL playoff games or even the upcoming national championship game in the college ranks or even NBA games, you got to go to MyBookie.ag. They're the only site that I'd recommend. I trust them, and you don't have to take my word for it. Check them out yourself. They have odds on every matchup as well as live in-game betting all season long on the NFL and NBA, and definitely want to take advantage of that in a big way. So join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit up to a 50% bonus if you use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. That's LOCKEDONNBA as the promo code to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. And if you're only going to bet in one place, the place to do it is MyBookie. Thanks to MyBookie for sponsoring the podcast today, and we get into the mailbag. So it's been a while since we hit one of these, and I want to run down a few different questions for you guys pretty quickly. Still want to hit as many of these as I possibly could. The first comes from Sam Bingham, and he asked the lowest price. What is the lowest price that you would sell on Ursula Misova, Dwayne Dedman, and Marco Bellinelli in trade? First of all, I don't think the Hawks are going to get a first-round pick for any of these guys. I do think that Dedman would have had a chance to net a first-round pick in trade if he were to get healthy and show that before the deadline actually occurs. But the deadline's a little bit earlier this year, so the Hawks only have about another month to do that. And Dedman, even if you sort of take his most optimistic projection in terms of when he'll be back, that's kind of a stretch. So I think his trade value took a hit, unfortunately, with the way that he'd been playing very, very well early in the season, but the injury was ill-timed in terms of being able to trade him for anything of real value. I will say, you know, targeting, you know, high-level second-round picks would be a good idea, as well as sort of top 45 picks is probably the best way to gauge that, as well as taking a look at some second-draft guys. For those of you not sure what that means, basically, you know, guys with high pedigrees that have washed out elsewhere or probably will wash out elsewhere, not in the rotation, might be sort of take some bets on some talent of guys who are young and cost-controlled for a couple more years could be interesting in that way as well. A lot of people asking about sort of where these guys could land. It's pretty tough to gauge that. I do think a team like Boston would find find some interest in Dwayne Dedman. I think Ilyasova, you know, Philadelphia, for instance, it would have been a great spot for him before they went out and traded for Trevor Booker, which I'm not really sure why they did that, to be honest with you, without getting too deep into the Sixers. I think Ilyasova would have a lot of value. He's a lot more malleable. Dedman, you know, is because of the way that he shot the ball early on this year, could be more flexible than he was previously, but Ilyasova can pretty much fit anywhere. Bellinelli is definitely a pure, you know, backup, you know, eighth, ninth man offensive engine. There's some teams that could certainly use him off the bench, but you have to be willing to be able to hide him defensively, because we talked about how bad he's been defensively this season. But I think, you know, unloading these guys for either in a package or whatever you're trying to look for, whether it be reasonable draft assets, just keeping your expectations manageable. You're not going to be able to trade these guys for anything of huge value. And frankly, you know, maybe you can extract a first-round pick in the future, not for 2018. You know, the Hawks already have three first-round picks, 2018. So looking ahead to 2019, 2020, trying to find some lottery-protected first-round picks might not be the worst thing in the world with these guys. And again, you know, Ilyasova and Dedman, potentially, if you wanted to get somebody desperate by the end of the deadline, you could probably extract something of value there for those guys. Bellinelli's a little bit less attractive, I would say, at this point in time. But he was traded for a first-round pick before, so you can always find some interesting trade stuff when it comes to people getting desperate near the trade deadline. The next question is also trade related. Comes from Jeremy, and he asks, is there any way we could package Dennis Schroeder and a veteran to get a first round pick? It's interesting to see what the market would be for Schroeder without getting too deep into it. I don't think Dennis is a huge asset, quote unquote, just because I think he's appropriately paid. You know, offensively, he's been very very productive this year, pretty efficient. And, you know, in general, I thought he played much better down the stretch in December. Of course, he was very what I would describe as bad in the Phoenix Suns game most recently. So there's been a little bit of selection bias. But before that, Schroeder was playing his best basketball of the season by a pretty wide margin. So maybe you want to capitalize on that a little bit. I'm not sure the Hawks are desperate to trade him. I'll be honest and say that I have no idea how the front office actually views him, because, you know, Travis Schlenk, sure, is one of the only guys in this roster that Schlenk probably really hasn't had an opportunity to weigh in on at all. The extension was given by the previous regime with Budenholzer and Wes Wilcox, and obviously, you know, most of the guys that were drafted, you know, you can kind of get a sense at least of the way that Schlenk feels. But with Schroeder, you kind of don't know. Bud has clearly been a fan of his work. You know, he was the engine, at least the sign-off guy when it came to signing him to the extension. But of course, since then, Schroeder had the off-court incident, and you know, he's probably had a little bit more of an opportunity to prove himself as less than a stellar option as a long-term starting point guard, in my opinion. But you know, in terms of packaging him, it's tough with how much money he's making. And again, the length of the contract probably doesn't matter for trade purposes, but he is going to cost you, you know, $13 million or so against the cap in terms of matching salary. So if the Hawks wanted to trade him, it's tough to do that unless you're going to find an expiring contract, just because I don't think the Hawks want to take back long-term veteran money right now, unless it's somebody that's sort of a challenge trade in that way. So it's really tough to find a deal for Schroeder that does not include an expiring salary coming back alongside a pick. And, you know, packages are pretty tough to gauge right now. But I think it's at least conceivable he could be traded this year. I think he's probably more likely to be an offseason guy in terms of trades. When we talk about Schroeder, he could be someone where if a team strikes out in free agency at point guard, the Hawks want to look to capitalize on that and move him in July. That would not surprise me in the slightest. But I think in terms of before the deadline, I'm not expecting him to be moved at all, even though it would not blow me away if he was. Next on the list comes from Terrence, and he asks, what would your ideal rotation be if everyone on the roster was healthy? It's very interesting, because most of the season, this has not been the case, and obviously Dwayne Dedman is still out, and Mike Muscala has not returned to the rotation yet. Simply put, in the front court, I would play four guys. I would play Dedman, Collins, Ilyasova, and Muscala as the fourth guy. And that's all that to say, you could certainly talk me into some games where you're playing small ball and only playing three bigs. And if you do that, it would be Dedman, Collins, and Ilyasova. I think Muscala should only be played with Collins, honestly, in the front court. You know, some of that's circumstance. I think Muscala is a pretty good player, and probably a better player than some of the guys who would be in the rotation at other positions. But the way that the Hawks roster is built, he's a center. So playing him with Collins sort of masks that a little bit. You can have those guys play together, and that can be an effective lineup. But having Muscala and Dedman play together doesn't really work a whole lot. And, you know, Muscala and Ilyasova, you have some issues on the defensive glass for sure. So I think he'd be your fourth big probably, but there would be lineups in which you play three bigs and go small and use Torian Prince at the four, all that kind of stuff. Kent Bazemore at the four, even DeAndre Bembry, we saw some at the four. I'm definitely in favor of that, playing some pure small ball And those would be my four bigs that I would use. On the wing, you go with obviously Taurean Prince and Kent Bazemore, Marco Bellinelli, and I would go with Malcolm Delaney with the way he's been playing as the fourth wing. Same sort of corollary here. If you wanted to hide Bellinelli in a game and did not play him, if there's a spot where you can't put him defensively anywhere, like against the Warriors, I think it's going to be really tough to hide Bellinelli anywhere defensively. You could certainly go with one or two of the Bellinelli Delaney crew, but you know Bud usually plays 10 guys, so that kind of requires four wings, and those would be the four wings I go with right now. Of course, DeAndre Bembry is a big point of contention. I'm a huge Bembry fan, but offensively he's been really rough this year. I still believe in him long term, and the defense is very encouraging because he's sort of a terror on the end of the floor. But I'll be interested to see how he looks when he comes back. But for now, you know, Delaney's just playing better basketball, so we'll go with him in this instance. And finally, Dennis Schroeder and Isaiah Taylor at the point guard spot sort of makes a lot of sense and pretty obvious in a number of ways there. Sort of a follow-up question to that came from JP Miller, and he asked, why is Luke Babbitt out of the rotation? I think at least part of that right now is that the Hawks played much better immediately when they simultaneously removed Babbitt and Bembry from the rotation. That's probably a little bit unfair to Babbitt, but his defensive rating this year is second worst on the team at about 111. That's not all him, but defensively he definitely has some issues. I will say, though, Tavon Cavanaugh is not the greatest defensive player in the world either at the power forward spot. I'm on record, actually, saying that I would be playing Babbitt over Cavanaugh, but I do understand why, but might want to see more of Cavanaugh. And frankly, you know, Cavanaugh is younger. Babbitt is going to be is an expiring contract with no bird rights, all that fun stuff for this year. So I totally get that. For me, I actually would be playing Babbitt right now, at least until you got Deadman back in the lineup. But I understand why they wouldn't. And, you know, in terms of actually why, it's tough to actually gauge. You know, Bud's not always forthcoming with actual information about why he does what he does rotation-wise. Doesn't really let that question a lot with different guys. And obviously he's been asked about the same thing with John Collins not playing a little bit more. And we'll have to sort of read between the lines versus what Bud is actually saying in terms of the rotation. Two more to get to here. One that comes from Joseph, who asks, who are some players that you would like to see Atlanta target with later first-round picks? Obviously, the Hawks probably have two first-round picks aside from the lottery one, which is going to be obvious, and we'll talk about that one a lot. We already have been. But the other two from Minnesota and Houston. A couple of guys here that I would like in that sort of 20 to 28, 29 range. Shake Milton of SMU is sort of a combo guard type with a 7-foot wingspan. Can also shoot it. I think he should probably be a top 15 player in this class for me, but I'm a little bit higher on him than most. I like him quite a bit. De'Anthony Melton of USC, another talented combo guard, has not been playing this year because of the FBI probe, but I liked his game quite a bit last year. Shooting is the only question mark, but he's very, very good at sort of doing a lot of things. Could be a nice value pick in the 20s. A guy like Kaden Bates Diop from Ohio State is sort of a combo forward guy. Raleigh Alkins from Arizona is sort of a 3-and-D type of player. Mo Wagner from Michigan, probably not the first round, but maybe that's that early second round pick. You know, the Hawks' own second round pick that's probably going to be somewhere in the 31 to 35 range would be interesting in terms of an offense only big man that could be stashed a little bit potentially and be an interesting offense only player that Bud could probably teach how to play defense a little bit. Et cetera, et cetera. So that's just a few names of guys that I like that are being mocked in the 20s. With the way that things break down right now, it's mostly perimeter players in the 20s, and I think that will probably change as we move on. We'll probably see some big men fall. In an instance where the Hawks do end up with Luka Doncic in the first round, at the top of the first round, they'll probably be looking a little bit away from the wings and the perimeter for the other two first-round picks because, they already have Taurean Prince and Bembry and Schroeder and even Dorsey from last year. They have to at some point start looking a little bit more in the front court if they were to take Doncic. But if they go with Hayton or Bagley or somebody else at the top of the first round, you could be looking more at the perimeter. So a long way to go, but a couple of guys there that I like that are at least being mocked, usually in the 20s. Last thing, a good friend of the program, Tyler Jones, has been a guest multiple times. He asked what my favorite movie is. Don't do a whole lot of non-basketball, but I think it's probably good on this Mailbag podcast to get out of here with this one. My favorite movie is tough to pick only one. I will say I'm a huge fan of the Ocean's 11, 12, 13 trio. Ocean's 11 is probably my pick in here if I had to pick one. I also like The Social Network quite a bit. I'm a big Aaron Sorkin fan, and as well as Tommy Boy is an all-time classic. If you enjoyed Prime Chris Farley, that would be another one. There's some more serious movies you could certainly pick out, and I like some serious movies. I'm actually a pretty big movie guy, so I like movies quite a bit. But this is sort of my sweet spot, and I'll go with Ocean's 11 if you maybe pick one. But hopefully that answers Tyler's question, and I'm sure I'll be shamed for this in public, which is fine. But I wanted to get that out there, and I don't do a whole lot of non-sports, so I wanted to touch on that a little bit. So thanks as always for listening to the podcast. Everybody's going to do it for today's show. We're going to take off on Friday because there's no game between now and then, but we're going to have a Saturday show in its place as the Hawks are on the road in Portland. That'll be a very, very late night episode on Friday, and then we'll wrap it up, and then we'll start again next week on Monday with the Sunday wrap-up. I hope to have somebody from Beach Review representing the site in Los Angeles for that back-to-back, so that'll be a lot of fun. Probably have them wrap up things there, but until then, I promise we'll be back on Saturday, and it'll be interesting to see what's going on in terms of the way the Hawks play in Portland after beating them at home. So we'll keep an eye on that, and we'll see you guys on Saturday.